I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Tom Lucy Plus One, the podcast. For those of you who don't know, my name is Tom Lucy. I'm a comedian, and I've been doing that for the last sort of 4 or 5 years. And this is my podcast where I chat to different people from the world of entertainment about their lives and their careers and all of that stuff. And this week, our guest is Tom O'Dell, which is very exciting. Tom is a massively successful singer and songwriter, and he very kindly invited me around to his house in East London, and we had a cup of tea and we chatted about everything, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. This is the absolutely brilliant Tom O'Dell. There's so many things I want to talk to you about.
Great.
Because you obviously like have achieved a lot.
Oh, I'm not really sure about that.
Have a lot to say.
I don't feel like that. I've achieved.
I just want to say, because the last time I saw you was at that charity gig you did
at the
Jazz Cafe in Camden, which was so good. And I've seen you before. I came to see you at Brixton. Do you remember with Shappy?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I remember meeting you.
And it was so amazing.
Yeah.
I was just going to... Because watching you perform, it seems like you really sort of love it.
Yes.
Is that the side of the industry that you prefer the most, or do you prefer writing and studios? And
I feel like it's almost like two different, cliche, but like it's almost like two different sort of hats, like that I wear. Like it's two different roles.
Yeah.
And I enjoy them both equally.
Yeah.
It's a nice, I think it's quite a nicely well-rounded process, which I really like, where I spend a lot of time writing and then you have this wonderful sort of payoff, which is being able to then perform those songs on stage.
Yeah.
And you get a real sort of gratification.
Yeah.
Like, sort of instant gratification.
Definitely,
from that experience. And but it's weird because when I'm far into a tour, you know, when you're sort of 6 months, sometimes the songs sort of they take on a whole different life, and it's strange. Sometimes I forget that I wrote them and spent all that time writing them, but I enjoy both equally.
Do you feel like, because you've been doing music for a few years now, that when you write a song, you know if it's going to be one that you'll enjoy performing live? And do you write songs that you know will be fun to perform
Yeah, but it's like, it's almost like it can be quite counterproductive that. It's almost like I'm constantly sort of fighting that those preconceptions that you do get from being a few albums in.
Yeah.
Of like knowing what works better. And I try as best as I can to write sort of as innocently as I did when I was 13, 14.
Yeah.
I think the more I songwrite as well, the more I realise that the most sort of uneducated position I can be in writing is the better the song is.
Yeah.
Because it's so sort of unintellectual songwriting.
You're right.
It's so, you know, it's like, as soon as I intellectualise it, I write utter shite.
Yeah. If you think about it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if it's coming from what I think will work.
Yeah.
As opposed to the phrases and the phrases and the melodies and the lyrics that I always end up really being on the albums are the ones that are sort of discovered almost, I wouldn't say accident's the right word, but they sort of are inspired by a place which isn't your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I know it all comes from there, but like, it sounds cliche, but it is the closest, I guess, way is the sort of heart rather than the mind. It's got to come from there.
Yeah.
Do
you think you can tell if you're watching a musician if they've written a song that they've just written it because they think it's what people want to hear?
Yeah, I mean the amount of fucking dross.
Yeah. Do you feel like that?
I mean, huge. Not. I wouldn't say music at the moment. I think just. Music in general,
yeah.
I often, you know, like I know pretty quickly whether I like it or not, and sometimes,
yeah,
I don't know, but then again, you know, I just listened to this playlist on Apple Music, which was it's called like the A-list in alternative or something, it's like a playlist they do on it. And I was on the tube and I was listening, and it's like it's such great songs on there, and it's like. I don't know. But for me, I don't know about other people, but like for me, I know that my best stuff comes when I stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Which I always think is the hardest thing about my job. It's because I can't, there's something very sort of, there's a wonderful security and I'm very jealous of that people have their work and they're able to know that if they work really hard at this thing, they see results.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing about songwriting is it's about putting yourself in a place, which isn't necessarily just working really hard. It's about putting yourself in a place where you're able to access this place in you that isn't really consciousness. It's something that is almost like meditative or... it all sounds very ethereal, like just listening to myself talking about it, but like, it's not. It's like, it has to be almost second nature and I have to completely forget that what I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah, but I presume that's a process that can take a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it can be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. Is it one of those things where, because not, you know, from writing stand-up, it's one of those things where you like, I'll get up in the morning and I'll sit down and go, right, I'm going to try and write for 4 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And some days,
it's just,
you know, you have loads of stuff and some days you sit there with nothing.
I know.
Do you have the same thing?
Yeah, totally the same thing. And it's interesting, actually, like recently I've been, all the past 6 months alongside making the album, I've been writing. I mean, I won't really go into it, but I've been writing like prose.
Yeah.
And which has been really interesting because... And when I first started doing it, I was like, I was like, it's wonderful because I'm not just, it's much more real because I have to be in front of this laptop and I write and I have to, it's a little bit more intellectual. But then even now, having done it for 6 months, I realized that it's exactly the same in some ways. I still, those great phrases and prose that I like comes from the same place as the songwriting. It comes from somewhere that's like, you're not quite, it's like, you're not quite sure how that came about, but I like it.
Sure. Yeah.
and it's sort of weird. It's like, if I don't know if, like, scientifically creating anything, I think, is always... I know some people do it, and they do it to great success as well.
Well, I'm just interested to talk to people about, because I think it's fascinating how people write things. And is there like a... Would you say there's like a time of day that's better, or...
No, and I used to be so obsessed with all of that stuff. Like, I used to be so obsessed with the sort of... the environment.
Yeah.
Because then I... Because I obviously wanted to try and control it.
Yeah.
So if I... I jot down, you know, it's like, so I wrote a good song.
Yeah.
You know, it was Tuesday and it was 10 p.m. and I drank 2 teas that day.
Yeah.
And I'd been for a run that morning, and I'd listened to a load of music. So therefore, if I do that again,
yeah,
I might be able to.
You know, I think that might be where madness lies, though.
Yeah.
People are like,
I know. I know, and it's weird because I've been through years of thinking that it was these sort of superficial things that put me in the place, but it's completely uncontrollable.
Mm.
It's like, it can happen when I feel most sort of uninspired. I think the one thing that I have certainly noticed is that the more I consume, the more I manage to write.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, the more...
In terms of, like, books and
yeah,
films and...
like, anything. Like, doesn't have to be music. It could be, like, just putting yourself in a place where you're absorbing, like...
Culture. Yeah.
And whether that also be, like, even just, like, being with friends or...
Yes, just doing normal things.
Yeah, like going to an art gallery or going to the cinema or watching a band, seeing an old friend, like, for... And I'm still guilty of this. Many years, I sort of shut myself away and lock the door and spend 13 hours writing and can do that for a week and end up with nothing. And then...
So you do you think over the years it's changed how... That's what you used to do?
I'm more open now to trying to do stuff as well.
Yeah.
Within, you know, I try to read and I've always done that, but...
Because I remember you saying that you went, I don't know if it was after the first album, that you rented a flat in New York.
Yeah.
Is that an example of you just completely on your own?
Yeah, it was like, it was partly sort of circumstantial that, because I was doing shows out there, but
yeah.
That was great because I really got involved in the sort of, like, I enjoyed being in New York and...
Yeah.
I remember, like there was some... Actually, it was, like, saw a lot of... Whenever I've stayed in New York, I've always ended up seeing lots of other British people.
Mm.
Because British people seem to congregate in New
yeah.
York. And I met lots of great people, like... I remember, actually, it was one night, me and a friend, we were in a bar, and we met Stephen Fry. We ended up going for dinner with Stephen Fry, and he told me all these stories, and...
Oh, wow.
And went to see him, and he was doing some play. It was a Shakespeare play, and so we... And it was great. It was like... And I met a couple of other musicians, and there was this wonderful sort of sharing of... music and art and stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
So it was really good.
And that helped you with the writing when you were out there?
Yeah, because it's just sort of busy and, like...
yeah.
And sometimes when I'm in London, I just... I shut the door and just... It's just never productive.
Do you feel like when you're in London, there's too many, or just at home, there's too many, like, distractions of people you could see, and but where if you're just on your own in someone you don't know,
yeah, maybe,
it's a bit easier to work.
But I don't know. I think I may be saying the opposite of that. Like, I actually think I should see more people.
Yeah.
In London.
Yeah.
Like, I think I think I'm quite sort of. Or new people and you know and
yeah.
new people and yeah, I think I'm probably not the most sort of like I have like a really close group of friends, but I don't have loads of friends.
Yeah,
I've never been.
Do you think that comes as a result of being so busy for the last few years, and Or do you think that's...
I'd like to say it was.
Yeah. Or do you think that's what you've always been like?
Not a very nice person. and no one wants to hang out with me. No, I mean... I don't know. No, I don't think... I just don't think I... I just don't think I enjoy conversation as much when it's in... when it's in big groups. I prefer it when it's sort of more one-on-one.
Yeah.
I'm a tennis player, I'm not a football player.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of comedians are like, I think. You sound like a comedian.
Yeah.
I think people are constantly disappointed when they meet comedians.
Well...
Because they're quite awkward and can't really handle a, like, close conversation, but talking to 3,000 people is fine.
Well, I think it's a similar thing, isn't it? It's like, there's a reason we all got into this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because... You know, if we'd all been the most sort of, like, confident, like, affable, sort of easygoing people in our school lives...
Yeah.
You know, why would there have been a drive to go on stage?
There's no need to do it,
There's no need to do it. Like, it comes from some sort of insecurity and maybe being feeling slightly uncomfortable within your skin. And I certainly can... You know, say that. You know, if I'd been a popular kid at, you know, I mean, I don't think I was unpopular at school, but like, if I'd been that sort of like jock, you know, like, you know, head of the football team or whatever, and you know, getting all the girls, and you know, going back to my, you know, if my parents had been really wealthy and everything had just been there, I don't think.
What, that you wouldn't be doing this now?
No, there'd just be no reason to do it.
Well, what would you write about? There'd be nothing interesting to write about, would there?
No, so it makes me think that we don't become... We weren't born to do this.
Yeah.
We became it.
I guess, yeah. I noticed there's a... Because I've watched back some of your old performances from when you were... I don't know how old, I'm guessing you were 20, 21.
Right.
When you first sort of started to do TV.
What is it? So it's like 2012, 2013. So yeah, like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you compare it to like the shows that I've been to watch recently, you're much more confident.
Yeah, cocky little shit.
But I like it. It's great. Like there was a bit in the Brixton show where you stand on the piano.
Right.
And I was like, this is like almost a completely different guy to the one
who I
saw like 5 years ago when he started. Do you feel that? Do you feel a lot more confident? And
well, yeah, because I think there's just... I always think like it's weird how, you know, particularly for young artists, like we're judged so heavily on our first pieces of work.
Yeah.
But it's like... You're 21 years old, like, it's like judging a doctor, you know, on their first year of medical school. It's like, there's so much, like, sort of growth that you hope will happen.
I think it would be a bad thing if you were exactly the same.
Yeah.
You want to change.
But it's mad how, particularly in music, you're judged so heavily on that first bit of work.
Yeah.
As if it's your sort of... What is it called? Magnum opus or whatever. It's your defining piece of work. It's like, I think that is one of the quite brutal things about the music industry now, is you are judged so heavily on your first piece of work. Like, whereas maybe in the 70s, there was a little bit more sort of awareness of you're going to make multiple records. And
do you feel like the industry is obsessed with like newness and people who's new and who's coming out, as opposed to people who've perhaps been doing it for 10 years who have suddenly become really good?
Yeah, I guess it's always interesting. Yeah, I guess there is that. I mean, is that in comedy?
Definitely, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's a weird obsession with...
I guess it's good in some ways though.
Well, I mean, I've certainly benefited from it.
Yeah, so I benefited from it as well. And then I guess now we're the two bitter. Oh, why aren't I the new kid on the block anymore?
It's weird that, because I started when I was 16. So for ages I had that like, oh, this guy's so young, and anything I would do, I'd always be introduced as like the frighteningly young, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of starting to, even though I'm only 21, it's starting to change now.
Yeah.
And there's people coming in who are newer, and that's quite strange.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Yeah. I think it's a weird obsession to have. I don't think it's the same in America.
No.
I think they're a bit more, I think you can have been going for 15 years and been okay and suddenly become really good and then become really famous.
Well, I always think about it in the sort of, like, you know, in the 70s, you're like Bruce Springsteen, who put out two albums that most people didn't hear. It was only his third album where he had sort of, you know, I genuinely don't know if that would happen anymore.
No.
Like, same with Elton John. It's like, you know, his first album wasn't the big one.
Yeah.
It was like the second, and it's like, and I think I can't imagine. I think it can happen now, but I think the sort of the environment's a lot less forgiving of that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whatever.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was when, because you had like such massive success at such a young age. Was that, because you seem remarkably well-rounded for someone who experienced so much fame at such a young age.
But I've constantly felt relatively unsuccessful.
Do you think that's an English thing?
No, I think I'm very content with where I'm at, but I don't, I sort of like, because I straddle, and very proudly, I proudly straddle that narrow road, which is neither sort of really alternative, that sort of 10,000 people here, and sort of Ed Sheeran, who's one of the biggest stars in the world. And like, I've sort of always wanted, what I've always found myself in that lane, which I think is very sort of fertile ground for creativity, because I think I'm not making 15-minute avant-garde pieces because I've never been particularly interested in that, because I'm obsessed with songwriting.
Yeah.
But I also don't have any desires to be the biggest pop star in the world, and never have.
Yeah.
But so I'm in this lane where I'm judged against both of them.
Yeah.
And neither am I winning it either. But I like it. But it leads you to live, I think it's a really good thing, where I don't feel unsuccessful. I don't feel like I've won. I don't think I've won anything. I feel like I constantly have to graft, and I get up every day, and I feel so passionate.
Don't feel complacent.
No, and I don't feel like I'm constantly looking towards that next song, and I think I would be, and I genuinely mean this, that I would feel quite uncomfortable anywhere else. I wouldn't want to feel the success of sort of world domination or anything like that.
Do you think you would not enjoy that?
No, because I don't know what... I think my ambitions would be blurred as to what I'm doing. I have very simple ambitions, and those are to do great shows and to write good songs. But I feel like there would be so many other factors that would come in with that sort of global domination. And I genuinely never got into it for that either. Like, I was just constantly surprised at each sort of, you know, nugget of success that I got. I'd never expected it. And
so you weren't sort of coming in at 19 going, I want to be the biggest star in the world?
No, I was content. I started, when I was 19, I was playing piano in people's bands.
Yeah.
And that was just like, fucking bananas to me. I was like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, this is mad. Like, I remember being, I was at this Green Man Festival in Wales, and I was playing, it was the first festival I'd ever been to, and I was, you know, as a performer, and I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like 19 and playing at a festival, and it's like, I had an artist wristband, and I was genuinely just blown away by the fact that I'd been given that opportunity, and so it was never, I was never one sort of singing in front of the mirror into a hairbrush.
I feel like that's quite a healthy way to be, though, that you don't ever feel like you've made it or you've done it, or because you'll constantly be pushing yourself.
Yeah, I think the day that you feel like you've achieved,
it's quite dangerous, I think.
Yeah, like what?
Particularly because you're so young, what happens then?
Yeah,
what
I know.
What do you do for the rest of your life?
Well, I guess you just do something else, maybe.
Yeah.
Would
you ever consider that, or?
No, I like writing.
Yeah.
So whatever that is.
So you would consider maybe taking a more behind the scenes.
Yeah, I like that. But right now I really like doing what I'm doing. But, you know, I also realise it's not, you know, there's nothing more undignified than a sort of, you know, 42-year-old, you know, dancing around a stage with, you know, on Top of the Pops. Like he's 21.
You don't want to be that guy.
No, I think as the years pass, my music will become more and more subdued.
I'd really like to see you doing exactly the same thing in 50 years, standing on pianos.
Well, it's just like, I think there isn't, but then again, you know, I mentioned Bruce Springsteen, and you see him, it's like, you know, but
yeah,
I think there's...
He's in shape, isn't he? I think that's the difference.
Yeah, and also, there's such integrity to it, you know, like his music. And I think more like, you know, I'd hate to be... You know, doing sort of real sort of pop music when I was like, you know, getting older. I think it'd be a bit, it's a young man's game.
For a person who had like, you know, come from a relatively normal background, and was obsessed with music, and then to start and then within a year win a Brit Award, that must have just been like, handle that? That must have just been too much to.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I can't really remember how I felt about it, but it was very exciting. It was like...
Is it a bit of a blur in your head?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I have my sort of, you know, iCal, you know, on my laptop, and it's still got that time.
Yeah, and that's it's like, weird.
And it's like, I sort of just... I think, I mean, I looked at it, I worked every day, which is not, you know, it's funny, because like, once you start doing that, you get on this sort of weird adrenaline rush where you suddenly, you know, a lot of these people, you know, like working like fashion stuff, you know, like you meet them, they take great pride in telling you, you know, that they haven't had a day off for sort of 2 months, and you're like, and you're like, and you know, everyone in these big cities, they go, oh wow, well done, like that's really good, and you're like, but actually, like doing it now, like I don't know if that is something to be sort of. Is that really good to just not, you know, not have a day off for a year or 2 months? Like, why do we applaud this sort of like level of productivity that kills us? It's weird. It's like, because I find myself or found myself very drawn to that. And once you get on it, you become fearful of a day off because you're like, suddenly you're presented with this great abyss of like, I have to. I have to be alone with my thoughts.
Yeah. I don't know, but presumably do you have like a year when you're working every day and then you might have quite a few months off or...
I try to space it a bit more now, so it's like just a bit more like... I used to be really fearful of days off after that. It was that first year I just wanted to be constantly working.
Yeah.
I think it's just almost like escapism and then it was really, all I remember is we've been really hard when it sort of, we finished.
Yeah.
I sort of remained living out of my suitcase.
Yeah.
Even though I was at home.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't quite face the sort of the reality of like.
Did you carry on like, when you had time off, are you one of those people who goes, right, I can't wait to be at home for 2 months, or will you go, will you keep travelling? And
no, I and actually even now, like, I really like travelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I...
So even in time off, you'll...
Yeah, travel, I like to go and see places, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's actually, it's funny, like, the past couple of years, I've been a bit more, like, I enjoy being at home a bit more.
Yeah, getting older.
I'm an old man.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I mean, how heavy do you work? Is it like...
Well, I don't know. I think I'm maybe going through what you were saying about when you look back at your diary and it was every day.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going through that.
Right.
But yeah. I like it. Like you said, it's a, yeah. it is a weird, like, you get addicted to it. And I then think, and then I pan. I do, exactly what you just said, I do panic if I don't have a lot going on.
But it's weird. I think we now, I think this sort of like, I think this sort of like, particularly living in cities, you know, we live in this like, we're in this sort of hyper-capitalist world right now, and it's like, it's all about like earning loads of money and you know, having hit songs or hit shows, and it's strange because actually being really busy and being super busy and never having a day off, it's like, I've now realised that it's not necessarily, I'm not at my best.
Yeah.
Like, if I come up with good stuff when I have a bit of time.
Do you know what I find? The other thing, I don't know if you, but when, if you're constantly doing loads of things and you're like doing gigs all over the place and you're just traveling or whatever, you don't really have memories of things. It all just becomes one big.
Yeah.
So like.
Bar.
If you it sort of does. It just becomes one massive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can't remember what you were doing last week because you've done so much.
Yeah.
I almost feel like it. For the benefit of like actually enjoying things and remembering things,
yeah.
It's quite good to like space it out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because I just think you can, I don't know, like last year was so busy. I don't really, obviously I remember it, but
yeah.
In my head, it's just like some whirlwind.
You're just constantly out on tour.
Yeah, just for the whole, well, the first half of the year I was with Jack Whitehall.
Right.
And that was just like, you know, every day.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, obviously. But when I think about it now, nothing really sticks out in my head from it.
And do you, when you tour, do you have like a tour manager?
Yeah, yeah.
And he drives you around?
Yeah.
And then you stay in like various hotels?
Yeah, I guess it's a lot smaller crew than it would be on your tour, because we don't have any,
yeah,
any
yeah,
production or...
Yeah, but and so, and it's mainly England, right, or UK?
Yeah, the UK, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people do shows in, you know, you can go to countries where they speak English.
Yeah, or you're like Eddie Izzard, who does it in different languages.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You can go to, like, Nigeria or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can go, like, to, like, the Scandinavia, for example, is, like, amazing for comedy, because they speak, arguably better English than we do.
Yeah.
So that's amazing, and Australia and America, and so you can travel a lot, but I don't think it's as much as you could.
The music's quite... I think these... I mean, certainly with the internet now, I think it's... I do probably 60% of touring, 70% touring out of England.
Yeah.
And then the last vote is in England.
Do you prefer performing in... Do you like performing in the UK, or do you prefer...
Yeah, it always has a... I think because it's home, it sort of like has a certain bit more sort of significance to it. And you also often know people... few more people in the audience, which always adds a bit of nerves to it, you know.
Were there, I'm not sure if this is true. I think I remember you saying that you supported Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Was that in New York, Madison Square Garden?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's like mental, isn't
it? Yeah,
it's
mad. It was so
fun. Is he one of your, would you cite him as one of your
hugely,
idols?
Yeah, hugely. And it's funny because, you know, lots of people sort of sniff at it, but it's like, because he's quite known for sort of Uptown Girl and stuff, but. I think particularly in this country, I mean, he's a hero everywhere, but like, yeah, he's a huge influence. Like, I love, you know, The Stranger is one of my favourite.
How did that support thing come about? Did he hear your music?
Yeah, they just got in touch.
That's mad, isn't it?
He never had a support act in his entire
career.
That's
mad, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was nice. I really had the chance to get to know him as well. Like, he's a smoker as well, so we'd have a cigarette in his dressing room before his show.
Yeah.
each evening and ask him. I just chewed his ear off about songwriting.
Yeah.
But he's quite funny because he told me, you know, and he says this in interviews as well, but it's like he's, you know, he, and I sort of, I can relate to it to some degree, not quite to the extremity that he says it, but
yeah,
he finds writing like excruciatingly painful.
Yeah.
It's like sort of giving birth or something, like, and I sort of get what he means. It's like, it is weird. It's like, it's, I see it as like the bit of what I do is the real work. Like, I love it, and the feeling of finishing something I love is like no other feeling, but it's the work bit. Everything else feels like,
do you feel like when you do like, shows and that, do you,
it's just so enjoyable.
So when you have done like a really great show, or do you feel at the end of it, do you feel like a sense of achievement, or is it sort of
I don't feel as much achievement as when I write a good song.
Yeah.
I sleep really well when I've written a good song.
Yeah.
Like, shows are more sort of like so enjoyable, but it doesn't feel like work. I don't come away going, you know, that sense that I've done something worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you write with somebody when you're writing your stuff?
No, I have done in the past, but not genuinely.
Because a lot of comedians like have a guy, don't they? That sort of do it with.
And I have in the past, like, what I'll do is it's not necessarily writing, but I'll get someone who I trust to come and watch. If I'm doing like a 1 hour preview where it's all new material, I'll get them to come and watch and then give me notes afterwards. I find that really useful.
Yeah.
But sitting in a room and sort of writing with someone, I've not really done.
Are you constantly collecting sort of imagery and
I just make notes on my phone, like if I think of something funny or I see something, that's even more to what you were saying earlier, that you can't create that in a vacuum.
No.
You have to be out doing things in order
to see,
like,
it.
See funny. You know, you can't sit in your room. Nothing funny happens in your bedroom.
Nothing does. No.
So you have to go out.
Very few things.
Yeah, a few funny things happen.
Yeah.
But you do have to go and, like, experience things. And so, yeah. I'm about to start doing this tour with Kevin Bridges.
I really like Kevin Bridges.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I like it. He's just so dry, isn't he?
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
You'll have to come to the London
show. I'd love
show.
To.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But he was saying exactly the same thing about, he just sort of tries to take in as much.
Mm.
He'll watch films and read books and read the newspaper and go for walks, and he'll just deliberately make himself sort of take in things.
Yeah.
Because he finds that's the only way he can keep his brain active. And that I found that really helpful advice.
I completely agree. I think it's weird, because, like, I think, like, you know, I was saying when you came in, like, because the band and I and the guys we tour with, like, the crew, we're really obsessed with comedy and always have been, particularly my guitarist, he's one of my closest friends, Max, he's a huge fan of comedy. He can recount every line of The Office. He can do The Office from...
There are lots of people like that. I know a few people who can do that.
They're just like, every line.
Yeah.
He knows the scripts. It's like, mad. But it's interesting because I think, you know, he's a songwriter as well. It's like, I think, you know, and I'm very into sort of like, I love like, I mean, Curb Your Enthusiasm is like one of my favourite shows.
Yeah.
And, I also love like, Peep Show is one of my favourites.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I grew up watching that.
I've just watched that whole thing, like, back just again.
Yeah. But, you know, and even, like, with stand-up as well, it's like, I think the thing that I always think is, like, there is so much similarities to jokes, to songs.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're... It's that constant, like... With songwriting, I think you're sort of, like... You're setting up something.
Yeah.
You're setting something up. You're creating a world in which you can then deliver a bit of information, whether it's emotional or... Yeah. And it's like, I think when I watch comedy, I'm always fascinated by the sort of craft of it. You know, like, the way... Because I think there's great similarities between writing...
I don't know, because I just feel like... To me, writing a song is infinitely more difficult than like recounting a funny story or.
But I don't think it's just different. But ultimately, with a song, you're searching for a sort of like emotional payoff.
Yeah.
Whereas with a joke, you're searching for sort of a comedic payoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's always a payoff.
I guess so, yeah.
It's always, I guess.
Well, we were saying earlier that loads of my friends who are comedians are obsessed with music, and if you were to ask them if they would rather be a comedian or a musician, they would say musician.
Right. Well, actually, I wouldn't rather be a comedian.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I...
Yeah, but it's weird. There is, like, particularly, I don't know if it comes back the other way, but particularly from comedy towards music. I do think there's that.
But I remember, because I did a few of them. Like, I got to know Michael McIntyre through this lunch or something.
Yeah.
And he was a really nice chap. And he said, will you come down and do... I think it was Michael McIntyre. Will you come down and do... He was doing this sort of big thing at Hammersmith. And he had all these comedians come down. And And there was like... I think Jack Whitehall was there and I can't remember who else. There was actually a guy that lives around here who I always see. I always nod to him, he never nods back. what's his name? He's sort of small. He's really funny.
Small.
Josh
Whittaker.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you know him?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's funny. It doesn't nod back.
Yeah, I always nod to him, never nods back.
I'll tell him.
Yeah, I always get you bastards.
Yeah.
But I remember because Michael asked me to, I think it was Michael Matter, but he asked me to play at the end of the show.
Yeah.
And it was raising money, I think, for something. And so I got to stand on the wings of the stage and watch all the comedians.
Yeah.
You know, before they went on, and then when they went on, it was sort of my first sort of experience around comedians. And the thing that blew my mind was like how serious they were before they went on stage. You know, like a musician is before they go on stage, you know, very sort of like trying to get into that headspace, like, you know, but it was like a load of them. There was big comedians in this wings, and I'm sure you've been in this situation many times, but you know, everyone was pacing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pacing going on.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know.
It's weird how different people deal with that.
Yeah.
Because some people, I definitely know some people who are like, who will be like making jokes and really loud like seconds before they go on. And right. They almost just carry it on. They're the same person.
Yeah.
But some people, it's like... I mean, I can't really... If someone tries to have a conversation with me just before I'm about to go on it,
And what about afterwards?
Afterwards is fine.
Right.
But I feel like you're like on a rush for hours afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But before... You know, like, I've been in the wings before and the... This is going to make me sound really diva-ish, but like the technician will be there.
Right.
And they'll just go like, oh, start talking about comedy or, you know, I find really funny or here's a joke for you or something.
Oh, God.
And I can't handle it. And I'm just like, I must look like such a rude prick because I just sort of go, I just don't say anything.
For example, with an inventor, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're a professional inventor, I kind of got this from Curb, but like, if you're a professional inventor, it's one of those jobs that like everyone thinks they're an inventor. Like, I guess the thing with music is you have this wonderful sort of like divide between you and everyone else because you're like, because you play an instrument and it's like taking you many years to learn that instrument.
Yeah.
And so most of the time, sometimes you get it, but most of the time people are sort of like, they never come up to you and go, oh, I've got a song if you, you know, I've got a really good idea for a melody.
Yeah.
You know, if you fancy singing it. Because I know if they did, I'd find that I find that really infuriating because it sort of diminished what I do. But do you find, because comedians, like, I guess in some ways it's one of those, like an inventor or I don't know, like a whatever, like one of those jobs that everyone thinks they can kind of do.
I think so.
Do people sort of, do they ever do that, like come up to you and go, you know, I had this funny situation yesterday.
Yeah, all the time.
And it's like, maybe you should, you know, do you want to take this?
It's a bit of a nightmare, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think, I had a really weird one the other day where this guy, I was in Liverpool and I was doing this university gig.
Right.
And this guy came up to me afterwards and he was like, oh, well, I do stand up. And that, like, I'm used to people saying that.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's great. Like, we're chatting about that. And then he goes, I'd really love to get your opinion on it. And he took his phone out and started playing a video.
Right.
And holding it so I could watch it. And I looked, you know, and you can see how long the YouTube, and it was like 8 minutes or something. And I was trying to think, how can I not, excuse can I give that doesn't mean I have to stand here for 8 minutes?
I know. Yeah,
and I just...
send you something in the toilet or
something. Yeah, and it's like, it's really difficult because, I mean, obviously, you know, if people want to do stand-up, that's great, and but I don't... You're conscious of coming across like a dick the whole time.
Yeah.
But it is one of those weird things where people are obsessed with asking you about it and telling you. It's got to the stage now where if I'm in a taxi or something, if they ask what I do, I won't say I'm a comedian.
Because
it's just too much, not hassle, but it'll be the same like three questions.
The other one is the app. I have a friend that makes apps.
Yeah.
That's the other one that I think would get really... I mean, my friend told me it gets really annoying. It's like, I make apps, and then the sort of black cab driver goes, you know, I've got a really fucking good... I've got this brilliant idea for an app.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, but I do it as a job, but...
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone has their idea.
Well, what I find... and it's like... Taxi drivers are obsessed with, like, telling me... about comedians they picked up.
Yeah.
Weren't very nice.
Well, I always get around here, and it's always Josh Widdicombe they picked up. How many cabs this guy's
getting? There's a lot of beef between you and Josh Widdicombe.
No, the thing is, I used to do a radio show, and I used to listen to it. I'm actually like a real big fan.
Yeah.
And like, I think he used to do a show on like XFM or something.
XFM, yeah.
Yeah, I used to listen to it. I used to really enjoy it.
Do people say, when you get in taxis, do they, what are the sort of things people say
to you?
Well,
like you, I always avoid it. No, most of the time you get that sort of, that Notting Hill vibe, where it's like, you know, I have a lot of admiration for you, because it must be bloody hard out there, you know. And, you know, it's and then it's like, their cousin was my cousin was the tech for, was George Michael's cat sitter. And then George Michael, and then they'll recount the story, and you know, isn't it sad? And you know, or you get the who they picked up before, and it'll be some like, you know, and it might be someone you know, and then you just know that if, and then you go, oh, I know them, and they just ignore you.
You just keep talking.
You go, I know them. I went for dinner with them last night. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of my cab.
Do you remember if they don't sort of recognise you and they sort of go, oh, I feel for you because it must be really tough.
Yeah.
Do you play along with that?
Yeah, of course. Like,
you don't go, oh, I've actually...
I'm
actually doing really well.
Yeah, but even... I think I did it once. And then,
you don't
and
carry the Brit Award, would you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I would fear for my reputation.
I think you should.
Do you do a lot of comedians, when they do a tour,
yeah,
are they doing exactly the same thing every night?
I mean, it really depends who you talk to.
Right.
I think some people really like having a show, and they almost perform it like a play.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like when I did Jack's tour, I think he quite likes really nailing the show and every nuance of it.
Yeah.
And then just doing it the same every night.
Yeah, no, I can understand that.
Whereas I quite enjoy just moments where...
You have those key...
Yeah, and I sort of build in moments where I'm like, well, I'm gonna at this point I'll talk to someone in the audience, and that can go anywhere.
Yeah.
I think I'm one of those people who would get really bored if it was just exactly the same every night.
Yeah.
But then it can work against you.
It can work both ways, can't it?
Sometimes you get an audience who aren't up for it for whatever reason. They're just not. It's a Tuesday night and they're not that loud, and they can be really tough. If there's a section of your show that's reliant on like back and forth, that can be really tough.
Yeah,
if they're not, they might be enjoying it, but they're just not interested in being involved.
Yeah.
Particularly older audiences are like that.
Right.
Do you feel like that with music, where if an audience is giving you more energy, you perform much more?
Yeah, 100%.
But do you try and, if the audience are quiet, do you try and have the same energy you would if they were like screaming?
No, I think you adjust slightly, and often I'll change, if, you know, we've done shows where we've expected a big energy from the audience, and then you go out and it's not there.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's important to adjust the show as you're going along, because otherwise you leave disappointed. Because if they're a quiet audience, you either have to grow it very gradually to get it out of them, but you're not just going to get it out of them immediately.
Yeah.
And so if you expect that, you go away disappointed. Whereas we try and adjust the show, if that is the case, and do slightly more intimate moments, which you feel like they might be there for, and then grow it, the tension, rather than, whereas sometimes, but then there's the opposite, is like when we've played sometimes, and this doesn't happen very often, but sometimes you play and it's like they're too far in the opposite direction, where they're just really noisy and really like screamy, but like, it's quite often with very young audiences, but they're not really listening.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like,
yeah, you just,
like, you could literally just fuck, you know,
you could see anything.
Yeah. And so those moments, you I've walked away from those kind of gigs where you feel a bit like you haven't really been given the opportunity to perform.
Are there gigs that stand out from your whole career? Are there any gigs you can think of that stand out as like your favourite performances?
The ones that I think are always the best are the ones when they're a little bit tough.
Mm.
The audience are a little bit tough at the beginning. But
by the end.
Yeah. They are in a place where you've got them completely around your little finger.
Yeah.
And that for me is like, because you really feel a sense of achievement.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's the same in the sense of...
Is that more... Do you find that sometimes at maybe festivals where they've not... Where they're there for lots of... They haven't come just to see you, they're there for lots of...
Yeah, you get that a bit more, but then at festivals it's so... The sort of openness, it can be... You often struggle a little bit to get that intimacy.
Yeah.
That you can get in a tent or in a...
theatre.
Or in a theatre, but... But I think those shows where you have to work for it a little bit, like...
Yeah, I know what you mean by that.
When you're made to work for it enough that you know you can obtain it, and then when you achieve that, I think that's always the most satisfying.
I've had that a lot with... Because most of my, like, career up to now has been opening for people.
Yeah.
And that, I find that a lot. I don't know if you had it when you open for people, when you go out at the beginning and people are a bit cold and a bit, like... We haven't paid to see who's this person.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, you feel like you've won them round.
Yeah,
they actually really like you.
And actually, weirdly, like, because I did a lot of opening up, and still do, you know, festivals and stuff like that. But like, that is the great joy of supporting people.
Yeah,
you're never gonna let people down.
Yeah.
You've got nothing to lose. Do you know what I mean?
Their expectations are already...
Yeah, their expectations are zero. So
yeah.
you've got an opportunity just to prove yourself. And it's sometimes like, that's a much better place to be in than to than people that
have really high expectations
and then you don't maybe meet exactly what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Which is weird because actually that was the difference between making my first record and second record.
Did you feel that pressure in the second?
It was like just even in through the people I worked with the label and stuff like that, like the difference between the first and the second is the first people had zero expectations.
Yeah.
And so were just, it was always, they were impressed. If they liked it, it was like, they liked it, like, wow, they're really impressed. And whereas...
but if they didn't, they weren't disappointed or...
Yeah, but if they didn't, they're like, well, you know, we didn't expect anything anyway. Yeah. But like, the second one is like, and this is from, you know, from the release of it to also sort of the making of it, it's like, you know, it's like people aren't looking to be impressed. They're looking to sort of go, that's not as good as the first one.
And do you feel a bit of safety in the sense that, like, the fans that you have will come to the shows and they will...
But what's weird is you never know that.
What, you feel like they might not like
it? I hope they would.
Yeah.
But I guess the weird thing about any creative job is if you're a painter to a book writer or anything, like, you never know. And so, like, you never know if people are going to come to your next tour, and you never know if they're going to buy your next album. It's like, even if you're... And it's funny, because I have friends, you know, like, you know, artists who, you know, sort of, that haven't had much success and who are really successful.
Yeah.
Much, much, much more successful than I am. And it's funny, the thing that runs through it all is that insecurity of their next piece of work. I don't think it ever changes.
No.
It's like you still don't know, like, if people are going to like it. And it's never guaranteed.
I remember actually doing, when I was like 19, I did this support for Michael McIntyre.
Right.
And I'd never met him before. And it was at this tiny theatre in Islington, The Pleasance. And it was one of his warm-ups, for he was about to go out and do, like, a massive arena tour. And I remember going into his dressing room to say hello. And he had loads of paper, and he was, like, really sort of looked nervous. Yeah, he was really, like, sweating over this paper.
Yeah.
And I remember him talking to his... tour manager being like, I'm just not sure about this.
Right.
And it was weird. It was the first time I'd ever, because I think up to that point I sort of thought, well, if you're at that level, everything's great. It's like you're living in this dreamland. But the pressure only gets more the more successful that you are.
I know, and I think that's the great illusion of sort of what success might bring.
Yeah.
And I'm going more on just meeting these other artists is just like people that I really admire as well. And it's, they all have that thing. And I guess that's what keeps them going and keeps them there is that they care and they don't know. And you know, like, I guess it's never, I think that's what's the most crazy thing about this job is you genuinely don't know that you're going to have this job in a year's time. Like,
I think any sort of like arts thing, you don't really know when your time is up.
No.
You, at some point, you'll just, people's careers just end, don't they?
But I think that's what sets it apart from so many other jobs.
Yeah.
Is that I think there's similarities, you know, in careers to other, you know, to being an accountant or what, you know, it's all hard work and whatever. But I think the different to my friends that are not in, you know, who are not artists, I think the great difference that they have is that they have way more job security.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I think if you do this, like, you really are just there's zero job security.
Yeah. Do you
unless you're like maybe that? Beyonce, but yeah, you know, I don't know.
But I mean, even if you were,
even if you're Beyonce, like,
you might make an album that everyone hates.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone who's like immune from.
No one's immune
from people judgment. It's weird.
Yeah, but I think that's almost what makes it the most exciting.
Do you feel like, because I'm really interested in people who have had success about what they say about this, but do you feel like you, that old cliche of feeling like you don't deserve, you feel like you almost are about to be found out? Do you know what I mean? I feel like when I'm given opportunities, I feel like I don't, why have I been given that? I don't feel like I'm particularly...
A sort of imposter vibe, yeah.
Do you ever get that, or...?
You know what?
I'm not saying
I,
that you... That
I,
you
know what? I can often relate to those things. I actually can't to that. Not because I think I deserve it, but because I can... I, number one, have a very real sense of the minor success I've had, and I've always been able to see it for all its transientness. Like, yeah. I don't feel having a number one album. I was always, maybe in that month I lost it a bit, but I've always been able to kind of see it for what it is. It's not,
yeah,
like, it's not, in a lot of ways it changes your life, but in so many ways it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, and success to me is so fickle. Like, it what people deem to be successful one month and what they deem unsuccessful the next month, it's so close.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is that it seems to me that as well, my success is very minor, so I don't feel... But I also don't value...
You don't put as much importance on it?
No, I don't, not... So it doesn't ever make me question whether I deserve it or not.
Yeah.
I feel I'm deserving of it as my next door neighbour who's an awesome musician.
Yeah. But I think that's probably a very healthy way to think about it.
I think so. But maybe it's more of a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Rather than a sort of... I don't know. I maybe in 2013, maybe I had an unhealthy relationship with it, but I don't, like, I don't know, I don't, I've met musicians who I admire, and some I, you know, don't admire so much, and this was many years ago, I worked out that I don't have the same amount of ambition as some people that, they want it way more than I do.
Yeah.
Like, they just want it, like, they'll do anything. And I've never sort of...
You're just content with...
I obviously want to, it would be sort of wrong for me to say I don't want success, like, I want it, but, like, I don't want... Like, I don't put success up on this sort of pedestal that's, like...
More important than anything else.
Yeah, like, I feel like sometimes people confuse it for, like, immortality or something.
Yeah, like, they confuse it will make for them happiness.
A happiness. Like, it will solve every one of their problems.
Yeah. But that's sort of what that thing, on a much smaller level, you know, having that experience with Michael McIntyre, sort of, I was like, success isn't happiness.
No.
Because he's clearly... Not that he's unhappy, but he's clearly worried about, you know, this show. And I'd never put those two... I just thought if you were that successful, that would bring a level of...
I think I thought that as well.
Yeah.
Coming into it, you realise there's a sort of... It doesn't... You know, you still have all the same... We still... Your life, at the bones of it, remains the same.
Yeah.
It's the surface level that might change slightly, which is maybe you can afford to go to that slightly nicer restaurant on the other side of the street.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the conversation or the insecurities or the, I don't know. That's what I thought was really interesting about that Jim Carrey thing, is he said, you know, he did all this stuff, like, he told himself he's going to earn $10 million and he was in every film, he's critically and commercially successful, and then he was like, at the end of it, it's like, it just felt
the same.
But it's interesting because I think I have to go in a second, but
yeah, yeah.
Um, But it's been really nice chatting to you.
Thanks for coming on.
But it's really interesting because I think a lot of these conversations that we're having now, I wonder where it comes from, because it's like, why do people think that in the first place? Why do they think it will change? I think it's because we live in this sort of like, you know, celebrity is almost like replaced religion. Mm. And we're now, with social media even more now, like we follow, we have such, it's fame is such a potent part of our everybody's lives.
Yeah.
And so it's given this sort of significance.
I read this thing the other day that they did a survey amongst young people, and they asked them, it was this school, and they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And 80% of them said famous.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even say singer or actor.
Just famous.
Just famous.
Famous. Which adored.
Weird. Like, I can understand. I can understand people saying footballer or famous singer. Yeah.
That's
famous.
What my generation would have been like. Yeah. Footballer or
famous for doing something, but just famous. Yeah. Just famous.
The fame is sort of overtaken the
yeah. Because people think it's a shortcut to.
But it kind of is in some ways now. Like you know you got like that. There is that whole. There is that whole thing is of like people are just famous now.
Yeah.
It's like.
I think it's a lot more like disposable now, isn't it?
It's weird to do a job where I share a sort of part of my job is sharing a profession with people that are just famous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, very little
like reality stars and.
Yeah, like.
But I don't think people. But I don't think people would ever see you in the same. You're both famous, but I think people would have a lot more respect for
you. I don't know if I'm famous anymore.
No, but I do. I as much as we're saying that people like are famous for doing nothing, I still think people have more respect for. Or like Elton
yeah.
John as compared
yeah.
to...
Well, there's just so much more longevity.
Yeah.
But I do think that thing you're talking about, so like they ask the school and 80% of the people say they want to be famous, I think that says a lot about this celebrity and fame. It's really
yeah.
a sort of slightly, I think, unhealthy part of... I think that... it's interesting as religion is sort of like I read this book on it. It's like the demise of religion. Was, I can't remember what it's called. But it's like you know the one of the great changes of the last century was
yeah
at the beginning of the century you had you know 70% of the population of a village would go to church every Sunday
yeah
and now it's like 20%
yeah
and it's like that change
yeah
is I think that has more, I think that's swayed our cultures a lot because I think people still need to, you know, me too, like I have that as well. Like you need to follow and,
yeah.
and be inspired and
yeah.
I think, and have a sense of community. And I think social media and celebrity might have replaced that little local church with Father Mark behind the altar.
I miss Father Mark.
Yeah. It's like, like you know, I think he was, I think, I go as far to say that Kim Kardashian
yeah.
has replaced...
The new Father Mark.
Or
yeah.
we used to call him... at my school, motherfuck.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, but yeah, it's weird. Interesting talking to you about it.
Thank you so much for coming on.
The great thing about podcasts, you've got so much time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll cut this down.
Yeah, no,
but
the whole thing up.
I just put 4 hours.
Yeah, four hours. The extensive, uncut version. No one in the world wants to listen to you and I talking for more than...
Me and Tom sat down for 12 hours and we talked about everything.
They don't want to hear more than fucking 5 minutes.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Tom O'Dell. That was brilliant. I really enjoyed that chat. So thank you so much to Tom for having me round to his house for that chat. And as always, thanks to Joel Grove, who produces the show, and Will Shahada, who edits, and my manager, Rick Hughes, for all your help. And that's it. That's it for another week. We'll be back next week with another guest. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Give it 5 stars. Tell your friends. And don't go changing.